James heartily endorses the endurance of Job. Yet Job complained mightily to God. How can we get the best of both worlds? Welcome to The Good Work. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, and we continue our series on the book of James. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Padrito Maynard Greed, also from the School of Theology at Walla Walla. I would like for us to address that question, patience and complaints. How in the world can we bring those two together? Because our passage for today, James 5, starts, "Be patient, therefore, beloved, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious crop from the earth, being patient with it until it receives the early and late rains. You also must be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near." What's James getting at there, Padrito?
He's getting at patience, but let me just stick something in here that I think is important to note. James is not asking for patience until the second coming.
He wants patience now.
The coming of the Lord is not talking about the coming of Jesus. The Lord here is talking about the day of the Lord.
Oh, the day of the
Lord. I saw that in your commentary, but in the ultimate thing, the day of the Lord is coterminous with the second coming.
If you are writing by the time of Paul.
In the Old Testament, day of the Lord is always a day of judgment.
Judgment. That's right.
Always a day of judgment.
But I'm simply saying it's not necessarily the second coming as we have thought of it.
But it can apply.
The day of judgment is not necessarily at the end.
It's you when read the Lord prophets, delivers justice.
Whenever the Lord gives justice. And it's a very strong in Zechariah, in Zephaniah, in all of these, the day of the Lord is coming.
But the second coming will be one of those
days.
The
day of the Lord will also be the second coming. But this is not necessarily talking only about the second coming. He's saying to the people who are being oppressed, you just be patient. God is in charge. He will do his thing in his own time, and you don't have to put a time on it.
So he has set these rich up as evil people. Now he's telling the people to be patient.
That's right. He's saying God is the one.
Well,
I don't think
he set them up as rich people.
I mean, he describes the rich people as really being nasty
evil
characters.
But it's not your job to take care of it. He says be peaceable. Your job is to be peaceable.
So he's incited them to riot and then says, be patient.
No.
He doesn't incite them to riot.
Well, let's pray for Alden. Shall we have a moment of prayer for him right now? His big thing, though, is to be patient.
Okay.
And he wants to be patient, and he uses illustrations here about just waiting and being patient. Now,
I have to insert something.
Yeah.
You know, I heard in the worst days under Mugabe in Zimbabwe, people had an interesting way of talking about the shepherd's psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not. Mm-hmm. We see it as a very pastoral thing. They do it almost as an imprecatory statement. The Lord is my shepherd. I will not want. You be careful.
You be careful
because the Lord is my shepherd.
Yeah, that's a
kind of patience.
Yes.
I'm not going to do you harm.
Right.
I'm waiting, but keep in mind that you are not the last word. The Lord is my shepherd. I like that.
That's right. But as a matter of fact, in my commentary, and I talk about this in chapter 1 and here, my commentary is I talk about patient endurance is not passively sitting back. So I am one of those pacifists who are going to fight for justice. I'm just not going to murder and take life, but I'm going to fight for justice. Now, he uses another interesting
thing.
Now,
you fit that in there, Pedrito? How is that patience?
If you look at the word for endurance, it's not a passive word.
Mm.
It's a word that is active, that you can be. You're going to be doing something, and there are a number of illustrations.
Not in a self-serving way.
But you're going to fight evil.
Righteous indignation.
You're going to fight evil, okay? But you wait. You don't take it in your hand to murder.
Okay.
Also, now he uses Job here, but if you look at Job. Job wasn't that patient.
Well, that was my question, because we talk about the patience of Job, but that only lasted for 7 days. And by the time you begin chapter 3, boy, he opens his mouth
exactly
and curses
right.
the day of his birth.
That's exactly
right. I heard a preacher
right.
say once that Job's friends came and they stared into his grief for 7 days and then spoke too quickly. I like that. No,
but the readers of Job, the readers of James, or the hearers of James, if they were just listening to his document here, would not think of the Job that we are thinking of. Because all we know is the book of Job in the Bible. A popular book at that time was the Testament of Job.
Oh.
And the Testament of Job portrays Job throughout as a very patient man. So the popular story of Job in the first century was Job the patient man.
So he may well have been picking up on that.
He was picking up on that. He used not only this, and this is an interesting hermeneutical question or a question of interpretation. James uses a lot of literature around him. Like in a sermon, I just don't quote the Bible on Ellen White. I use stories from life. I use stories from the documents that are being written. Mm-hmm. And the documents that were popular were the Book of Enoch, the Wisdom of Baruch. And throughout Job, you find a lot of that popular literature that the Testament of Job.
You mean throughout James?
Throughout James. Yeah. The Testament of Job is that one. And I suspect that his readers would more think of that than he would think of the first two verses, the first two chapters of the other Job that got into our canon. Mm. So if we understand that
holy speculation from you, Petrina.
it makes sense for me that people would think of Job as patient when you look at the text, there was only two chapters and then he lost it, that God had to even come down and blast him.
I've never read the Testament of Job, but you say he's portrayed as a patient man.
Very patient, very helpful, very given, and he was just perfect. But it was written by who wanted to.
In the biblical book, it says in all this, as you get the end, Job did not sin with his lips. And I know there are some rabbis who said, but yea, verily, Job did sin with his lips. That's why the Lord gave him double reward at the end, but no place in the world to come.
But the fact is, wherever he got it from, the fact is that he saw him as a patient person who had a lot of suffering. Again, he was suffering. The theme of suffering comes out. And how did he react to suffering? It wasn't with violence.
Yeah, I remember a story about a preacher who went to visit a widow who was in great distress, and her words transformed his life, because as he commiserated with her, she said, "Yes, but thank God it's as good as it is," in the midst of her suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The preacher took a lesson from that.
Oh, yes.
Now, just to summarize, Pedrito, when he admonishes them for patience, it's clearly in the light of the oppression that they were suffering from
yes.
the rich.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
and general suffering. He's making a transition now as he comes down to the next week's lesson. He, in the context immediately, he's saying, yes, you're getting a lot of suffering. Do not take it into your hands to fight back and to defeat. Okay. And I use this also for even these many Christians and the liberation theologians who says, but you have to pick up your thing and fight, just like America got up and fight against the British in their oppression. And I'm saying, but James calls the Christians for a different way. It doesn't mean you sit back and take everything, but you still just wait patiently for God. Just he'll come through, just like the latter rain will come and the former rain has come. He will come through for you. And don't start grumbling against one another. And he goes through all kinds of details. Don't all this judgment. God is going to do all of that. Let's just leave it in God's hand. That's what he's encouraging them here to do.
So the great pacifist leaders like Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., they shine in the light of this.
Oh, they shine.
Yeah.
They
really knew
shine.
Not to use violence.
That's right. Yeah. They really, really
and
shine.
And the moral power of that is massive.
I know. Mm. But most of us can't wait for that. We're not trained that way.
We need our guns.
Oh, I don't get that.
Well, if you look at my wife and I read the book Long Journey by Mandela. You know, it's really quite amazing how they maintain their focus on nonviolence, but gradually use the threat of potential violence.
Mandela did it, but Gandhi didn't do it, and Martin Luther King never did it.
Yeah, to me, Luther King and Gandhi, Mandela's a great man, but he's not in the same category in my mind because he played with violence. He dabbled with it
quite a bit of time, and he calmed down a little bit. But Gandhi.
His later years were far better than his earlier years.
That's right. If Martin Luther King had dabbled with it at all, the outcome of today's society would be very different.
Yeah, yeah.
But Gandhi,
and he understood to the center of his being the power of nonviolence that man did. About him, he was not going to be a violent
individual. It's really, really powerful.
The restraint of that is enormous.
Now, there's one last point in today's section that I want to touch on. Verse 12, above all, my beloved, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. What in the world is that
you
about?
Many commentators have asked that. How did you get that in there? Why did you stick it in there? You know,
it was an extraneous thought.
But it's really not. He's still with the tongue. He's still with the danger of the tongue.
And by the way, he's not talking here about saying bad words.
No, he's not talking about bad words. It's calling on God like Jesus did in antithesis in Matthew chapter 5, where instead of just saying yes and no, you're calling and saying, I swear by this and this and this, and I have a whole lot of names back then to swear by, to say that you're telling the truth. And he said, no, just say yes, just say no. Calm the tongue. And he had to get that in somewhere.
So he got it stuck in there.
Basically, it's calling is that you ought to be able to speak straightforward, and you shouldn't have to invoke all kinds of extra trimmings. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
You just be able to, your yes ought to be yes, and your no ought to be no.
But, you know, there are religions, you know, like Anabaptists, you know, and Mormons and some of these.
Mennonites
will not swear at all in court. Because
they just use Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses was the other one I was thinking of. Not Mormons. Jehovah's Witnesses will not swear. They use this text. But it's, again, in its context, it's not talking about our contemporary situations. It's really talking about just be truthful and let people just accept your word because you're trustworthy.
Now, next week is our last one on the book of James itself, because we have this astonishing situation that the last lesson departs from James and tries to address the question of gospel. But next week, the last one has to do with prayer, healing, and restoration. And there are some crucial passages there that I hope that we'll take enough time to work with them. And Dave and Pedrito will be my conversation partners again next week. I want to thank David Olson, our program engineer, and all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.